Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
You're listening to Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a podcast about Linux, open source and amateur radio for everyone. Now here are your hosts, Russ, K5TUX, Cheryl, W5MOO, and Bill, NE4RD.
Well, hello everybody and welcome to episode number 233 of Linux in the Ham Shack. We've been gone almost a month because Bill decided he had to take his wife to Europe, and that kind of screwed everybody over. But
yeah, I'm not geeky enough to participate in the podcast.
No, we all needed some time off anyway, so that worked out well for everybody. But we're back again, and we're going to do episode number 233. I'm Russ, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD.
So we're going to kick things back off with our short format type show. So we're going to do a few segments, some amateur radio stuff, some open source stuff, some topics which combine both of those things. Then we're going to do a social media roundup and go on our merry gentleman and gentle lady ways. So we can take a quick look in the chat room here because we have a new person in the chat room tonight who has for the first time joined us, and that's Emil, K-E-5-Q-K-R. And did I get that he's from Amateur Logic TV? Is that
right? Yes.
All right. Excellent. So we have an Amateur Logic TV host listening to us tonight. Very cool. We also have Dave, KB0OWD, Don, KB2YSI, and Don, KC9ZMY. And if anybody else shows up during the course of the show, we'll, of course, mention them, too. We thank everybody who decides to listen to us and chat with us live while we're doing this. So, Cheryl, do you want to do this first story, since you say you don't participate in the show?
I didn't say that.
You said you weren't good enough to be part of the podcast.
I'm not geeky enough.
Oh, geeky enough. Okay.
That's what I said.
Well, you're certainly geeky enough to read these stories, so.
I don't know that I know how to read.
Well, there's a community college right up the road that can probably help you with that.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or you can just talk to Gary. He knows how to read.
Does he?
That's what he says.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, okay. We're doing some amateur radio topics, so Cheryl's going to give us the first one.
All righty then. First topic is, now that field day's in the bag, think about WRTC. The WRTC 2018 activity program, which runs the same weekend, I believe,
yes,
as the IARUHF championship, was installed to not only to create big pileups for the WRTC stations during the WRTC 2018, which is July 14th and 15th, 2018 in Germany. We also want to honor your effort to make these pileups possible. By sending in your log shortly after the competition, you help us to do the best possible log checking amongst the WRTC competitors. We hope to create an interesting competition that provides fun for all.
All right. Yeah. Very good. And what is WRTC for those who don't know, since Bill didn't want to define the acronym?
I don't know. World Radio something. Team competition. I don't know. Something like that. Yeah. So basically, it's a bunch of, two-man groups. I should have looked this up more.
The two-man group, isn't that Vegas?
Yeah, the two-man group. Yeah, that's exactly what. So the stations, there are 63 stations that'll be participating in as WRTC. So this is like their big competition where like every team has the same amount of equipment, same amount of people, which I think is two, and they can only run 100 watts. And they don't know what call sign they're going to be until the day of the contest or like a few minutes before the contest. So it's kind of interesting for them. And one of our president of our club out here, Pat Barkey, is NRV. And he also used to be the QST editor. I'm thinking, what was the National Contest Journal editor? He's one of the competitors as well this year. He was just telling us that, yeah, he's getting ready to head out over there and kind of gave us a little bit of the information and stuff like that for the WRTC. But yeah, this is a big deal, and that's why they really want people to turn in their logs as soon as possible so they can score these teams. And I believe there's also some stuff that they'll be giving out, or collectors or certificates or something like that, for a response on working as many of these guys as possible.
So I have the information on it. It's the World Radio Sport Team Championship. It's an invitation-only event in which the world's elite contesters compete against one another using amateur radio stations that are in one specific geographic area of the world and are equipped with similar antennas and operating restrictions. It's organized by a standing committee of internationally recognized contesters and a host organization in the locality where the competition will be held. The closest thing to a world championship and the sport of contesting.
Contesting is now a sport. And who are these elite contesters? How does one become an elite contester?
I don't know. This is a wiki article talking about...
But if you won field day, you're an elite contester?
Apparently, it only happens every 4 years.
Oh, so yeah. It's like the Olympics of contesting.
Yeah, because it talks about, you know, like it started in 1990. The next one was in apparently 96. Then 2000, 2002, 2006, 2014. So apparently, 2010, excuse me. 2014 and 2018 will be held in Germany. Well, I've been in the United States twice. 2014, it was in Massachusetts, and the first one was in Seattle. So, and then there was one in San Francisco, one in Slovenia, one in Helsinki, one in Brazil, one in Moscow. So
it really is like the Olympics.
Yeah. I'm looking at the...
I want to meet an elite contester.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you have to place in a certain level in some of these contests that are big, like the CQ Worldwide DX, CW, CSSB, the prefix contest, the IARU HF Championship. They have different values of scores, point values that will be considered. And there are 32 events. The number of qualifying events varies based upon the geography, blah, blah, blah. New qualifying contests, of course, are this contest, the WRTC 2018. And they must use up to 12 published scores from the above contest to calculate their qualifying score. So, yeah, it's a lot of math.
Yeah. The wiki says that it's in some years, selection has been entirely at the discretion of the organizing committee, which has relied upon past contest results of individuals who applied for inclusion. And other years, selection has been delegated to national radio societies or major contest clubs, which voted on the contesters that they wanted to represent them. It's generally structured to ensure a certain number of contesters from each part of the world and a certain number from specific countries will be invited. They're not sponsored and must pay their own travel and lodging expenses. Each team of two, it's held on the second weekend of July. A random draw is done to assign each team to a particular station, referee, and call sign. Teams are generally allowed to bring their own transceivers, headphones, microphones, telegraph keys, and logging software, but are required to use the antennas provided for them at their station. They have to follow the rules. There's additional restrictions. And apparently the scoring formula changes from time to time.
And I think that's enough about that.
Yeah, that's like referees. Yeah,
because honestly,
it's kind of cool though. So.
Unless you're one of these elite contesters, you don't care.
No, it is cool though.
Yeah.
So,
and we just had somebody else join the chat room. KE5WMA.
Paul.
KE5WMA. He's now with us.
Very cool. All right, so let's move on from contesting to our next topic in the amateur radio world, and that is the RBN, Reverse Beacon Network, is spotting FT8 signals. KB6NU reports on his blog that the Reverse Beacon Network has started experimenting with spotting FT8. Their results are yet another indication of how FT8 is taking over HF. Interesting stats for May of this year, 4,370 CW.
That was one day in May, May 24th.
May 24th. All right. Sorry. May 24th. Yes. 4,370 CW contacts or stations, 46 RIDI, and 29,298 FT8. Yeah. So craziness. FT8 is definitely the digital mode of choice. So
yeah, with so many stations even just listening, you know, the propagation information that it gives back is pretty significant, I think.
Yeah, even when I was using Whisper, like if you did every station that was using Whisper and just looking at the map of beacon reporting, that map was pretty cluttered, but I can just imagine how ridiculous the FT8 map is. So, all right, very good. More information about how FT8 is just like the only thing anyone's ever going to use ever.
Yeah, there are so many memes on the internet now for FT8. It's that's getting old. It's just another mode, people. There'll probably be something else that's going to come out that you'll be interested in.
It'll be FT4. It'll be twice as fast as FT8.
Yes,
right.
Absolutely. It'll be like 3-second blips, and your machine won't even like do anything. Anyway,
at some point, it's like these contacts are going to become processor intensive. They'll be so fast.
Yes.
Yes. All right. So anyway, you said this one is kind of billified. So Bill's going to do the next story.
Sort of billified, just because I just kind of manually typed everything and really wasn't cutting and pasting and stuff like that, because I was reading the July edition of the QST. And I was thinking of all the controversy and everything else that we've had earlier in the year with the ARRL. Here finally is your chance. If you have been a member of the ARRL for at least the last 4 years, and happen to live in Central, Hudson, New England, Roanoke, or Northwestern divisions, and you have 10 friends that happen to be members of the division, that would sign a nomination form for you, and you can now run for director of the division. Just remember, these are unpaid volunteer positions that do require you to travel out of your own pocket to board meetings and, of course, to visit your many in your empire, your states and stuff like that, your sections and stuff like that. So, so this is now a good time for those members in Central, Hudson, New England, Roanoke, and Northwestern divisions to put up or shut up. So I'd like to see the voting board just full of people's names and stuff like that. I'm in the Northwestern division, by the way. But I will not be filling out a nomination form. I'm already too busy. But yeah, if you're a member and you're a young guy, especially, right, because you're supposed to be taking over the world at this point, and you have so many opinions of how things are run by the OMs that are in charge of the organization, this is your opportunity to have a fairly significant impact. And remember that you have to be active, visible, and represent the interests of the division members. In some cases, the other ones have not. But hey, this is your opportunity to actually do that and do what you expect them to do. So there.
Very good. So participate. Spend money out of your own pocket and be a part of something.
Absolutely.
Or don't. Whatever. No, be a part of something. It's always good when you can give back and when you can make a difference. All right. So moving on from our amateur radio topics, we're going to move into open source topics. And Bill just highlighted the title of this one for me. So that's great. I'll go ahead and read it. It's SUSE partners with growth investors EQT continue momentum, strategy, execution, and product expansion. Wow. Look at the buzzwords.
Buzz, 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 buzz.
Yep. SUSE today announced plans to partner with growth investor EQT to continue. Well, okay, we already went through that. The completion of EQT's acquisition of SUSE from Micro Focus is subject to Micro Focus shareholder and customary regulatory approvals and is expected to occur in early 2019. Richard Brown, I don't know who Richard Brown is, said.
Sorry. I was going to put his title there too. I think I messed that up. But anyway, he's on the. I'll read that real quick while you read this thing.
Okay. Richard Brown.
He's the chairman of the OpenSUSE.
Okay. Chairman of OpenSUSE. Okay. Yeah. Said in the mailing list that Nils Brockman, CEO of SUSE, personally called him this morning to assure him that this news will have no negative impacts on OpenSUSE. This will be the third acquisition of SUSE since the creation of OpenSUSE. The second under the leadership of Nils and his team. Just as happened in that case, SUSE will be making no changes in its relationship between the company and the OpenSUSE project. Links, of course, to the mailing list article and the story will be in the show notes. So,
yeah, the title was really soft sounding. It really should say SUSE got bought for $2.5 billion by equity fund.
Well, there you go.
Good for them. So I guess Microsoft won't be buying SUSE anytime soon. So look out, Conical. You're on the radar.
I think they've been on the radar for some time, actually.
Yeah.
All right. So Cheryl likes peppermint, so she can talk about the next story, or read it at least.
Okay.
You know you're like supposed to read and stuff, right?
Am I? I told you I'm not geeky enough. So.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, no, again, my computer is dog slow for some reason. Did you boot it up today?
Yeah, like an hour ago.
Okay, I didn't know if it had been on for the last
month. It's been in the other room since like weeks ago.
Whatever.
But, so, anyway, the next story.
There's a problem, yes. So, Peppermint 9 has been released. Team Peppermint are pleased to announce Peppermint 9, the latest iteration of our operating system. Based on the 18.04 LTS code base, Peppermint 9 still comes in both 64 and 32-bit flavors, so older hardware is still supported. Some of the updates. We've replaced LX Rander with X... Yeah. Yeah, this is not a good day.
LX R&R with XFCE display settings.
Yeah, my glasses are in the kitchen. For monitor settings, as we continue to look for better options that add functionality without adding weight, and to continue the migration away from the few remaining LXDE components. By user request, the Menu Libre menu editor is now installed by default and no longer breaks the menus as it did in the previous Peppermint version.
Well, that's always good.
That's always a good plus. Yeah. Peppermint 9 is now both our normal Mint install software manager and GNOME software for users that want snaps, flat packs, and its usual favorites position. You'll find GNOME software at Menu System Software. The kernel is now in the 4.15 series. The NEMO file manager is now 3.6.5. We're back at the upstream Ubuntu version of GW, which is the uninstall option. The previous version did not. And Peppermint 9 is now the 18.04 LTS code base, so it has access to all the latest software.
All right. Very cool.
It's like
new and improved, and yeah, they fixed things. So
Yeah.
Outstanding.
Yeah, especially stuff that apparently was breaking.
Yeah.
A lot. So.
I love that. We now included the version that works. Okay, fantastic.
Yeah, that's not mentioned there, but that's kind of what it sounds like. So. It's a
great business decision. Yeah.
Always best when you can put out, you know, products that actually do what they're supposed to. All right, so moving on. I did the first one. Cheryl did the second one. So once again, we'll put Bill on the third one.
There we go. We're going to be talking about another release here. The Linux Mint 19 has been released. And it's awesome. Well, at least according to the It's Foss people. The wait is over for Linux Mint fans. The glorious Linux Mint 19 release is finally here. It is, of course, based on the Ubuntu 18.04 LTS and will be supported until 2023. Updates include the Cinnamon 3.8. Has a sleek new look with retouch icons. Has a new welcome screen. Time shift backup tool is now integrated with an update manager. The update manager doesn't show update level by default. A revamped software manager with faster search. You can configure the maximum volume anywhere between 0 and 150 because, you know, 100 is never enough.
No, that's right. Never.
So, yeah. So you don't have to use just VLC to crank the volume up. You can just go use your own little
This is for people who tell the temperature in Kelvin.
Yeah, exactly. Well, then it should go like down to negative or something. I don't know. So also, we got a PDF editor, got improvements with custom thumbnail sizes and recently viewed documents. File manager has a faster search. Let's see. Mint 19 overall is a faster experience thanks to changes made to improve the application load time. And it has improved high DPI support. And there is no KDE addition. So this must be a feature.
I think that is a feature. So what versions do they have? Just Mate, or are they doing anything else?
I think they have Cinnamon, Mate, and one more. I can't remember what the third one was.
Probably like XFCE maybe, or something.
Yeah, it's probably XFCE. That's what I'm thinking it is. Yeah. So.
All right.
There you go.
There you go. So Mint and Peppermint, both brand spanking new.
Absolutely.
For your minty enjoyment.
And I took these two for a spin, so we get to talk about them a little bit more.
All right, so I'll go ahead and read this, and then you can flesh it out since you've actually done the playing with. So moving into Linux and the Ham Shack, we're going to talk a little bit about the LHS readiness of these two new distributions, Peppermint 9 and Linux Mint 19. And Bill says, although we know that LHS V1 builds on Ubuntu, our boss, we figured we'd still go out and test some distros that roll into our desks. This week, we're looking at these two new releases, Peppermint 9, Linux Mint 19. Not much of a venture away from Ubuntu 18.04, but let's see if we can employ the same tricks to get a Shack computer out of these two. And you have done this, I guess, so tell us all about it.
Well, so I'll start with Peppermint 9, because that one ended quite early. The pros of it, of course, are the fact that it's still running 18.04 LTS, so that's great. The cons, it won't run under VirtualBox, at least at my house. could not get the stupid light DM to actually show me anything meaningful on the screen when it booted, so I couldn't get it installed to check it out or run the live disk inside of VirtualBox. So I'm gonna give that a score of 1.0 for basically just having a heartbeat, and have to try it on something that actually has some real hardware. But the fact that it's not running under VirtualBox, but yet I can run the LTS under VirtualBox, tells me they've dorked with something they shouldn't have dorked with.
that seems clear. Yes.
So
and
here's a quick question, just so people know if they have missed this in the past. What is the readiness scores? They go from 1 to 10, 1 to 5.
1 to 5, basically.
Okay. Oh, 1 to 5.
Yep.
1 to 5.
1 to 5, yeah. with decimal increments. Gotcha. So 1.0 to 5.0. There have been no 5.0s. There have been a couple of 1.0s, which is basically a distribution has been released, so therefore it has a 1.
Yes, it's Linux. It gets 1 point for being Linux.
So I'm waiting for the 0.5 to come out somewhere in the world. So
yeah, no, I won't do that. As long as it's still Linux, you know, maybe a BSD or something like that. But so I even tried the VGA equals 491 fix, which basically just, you know, tells the console that it's, you know, 1024 by 768 and 16 colors. But that really has no impact as soon as it goes into light DM. So, yeah, so this one's kind of dead on arrival. I was kind of looking forward to it because I've used Peppermint in the past as kind of like a toy distribution. It's one of those distributions that came out kind of like a Chromebox, or, you know, Chrome operating system type thing, where it wanted to kind of say, well, everything's a web app or everything is consumed on the website. And that's what they kind of geared the OS and the interaction for, was basically running the web services. And actually, I think that when they first came out, or at least early on, they had like the ability to add web pages and make them web apps yourself. So you could actually create like a wrapper and an icon, and the app would behave inside of just a shell without like all the back and forward buttons and stuff like that. So it's always been kind of like one of those cool little boutique type distros based on Ubuntu. So I will revisit it and we'll take another look at it. Okay, so let's look at Linux Mint 19. So a lot of people use Linux Mint. We've heard a lot of people at Hamvention talking about their Mint installs and stuff like that. So I look forward to testing this one out. This one, of course, has pros too. It's the 18.04 LTS. I tried the Cinnamon Desktop Edition. The PPAs worked fine. It was peppy and clean. Cons, though. Okay, so here's what we got to talk about. So cinnamon doesn't taste like mint. So I'm thinking there's some advertising issue there. The issue with VirtualBox does kind of persist. They have a similar issue with the video setup, although I was able to get around it and actually get it to boot and install. So that was kind of nice. I ran into a one big issue, though, with the meta packages installing the ham radio pure blend stuff. When I went to do an apt install ham radio star, it, of course, resolved the packages or the meta package names. But instead of actually installing the packages, it installed just the deb files for the meta packages. So meaning it actually installed a deb for hamradio-logging, which actually is absolutely nothing. So I'm not even sure how the heck it installed that. And I could never get it to actually resolve any of the meta packages out completely at all. So that crap is broken. I'm not sure what they did to break meta packages in their own repo. But so this one earned a good score of 1 as well. So both of these packages are pretty much dead on arrival until, I think Mint's more broken because I haven't been able to get this far with Peppermint 19 or Peppermint 9. So yeah, Linux Mint 19. I would hold off unless you're just doing an upgrade, which I'm sure that probably won't break anything. But if you're doing a new install and expecting the meta packages to actually install some stuff, it's not going to happen. So I would not recommend Linux Mint 19 at all.
Well, that sounds depressing. We've got these two brand new releases based on the LTS 18.04 of Ubuntu, and neither of them work. But yeah, you were doing it in VirtualBox in both cases, though.
That's correct. In the same machine and same configuration, I actually built all the LHS V1 builds.
That's interesting. I mean, it's not saying that this wouldn't happen on bare metal as well, but the fact that you can't run it in VirtualBox is kind of...
It's peculiar.
Yeah.
You know, it's really... Yeah, I don't understand why it wouldn't work. You know, it is based on the same distribution that ours is based on. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of... Yeah, I'm questioning it.
You're perplexed.
I'm perplexed. I'm kerfuffled.
You're kerfuffled. Excellent.
Isn't that so, a Judge Judy
all the more
comment?
Reason to use. Yeah, all the more reason to use the LHS 1 V1 builds.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. Yes, because those have been confirmed to work.
Yeah,
and they are also based on Ubuntu 18.04 LTS.
Yeah, and they're supported by somebody else besides us, so don't ask for support. Yeah. Only in the chat room. We'll answer your questions there, but
all right. And since you apparently got tired of not doing anything Linux and the Ham Shack related while you were in Europe all that time, you decided to come back and root around in the GitHub dumpster again. Yes. So we'll let you talk about your spelunking then.
Yeah, so basically I got so discouraged trying to install those two builds that I said, well, screw it, I'm going into GitHub. So I took a dive into the depths of the microsub, GitSoft, or GitHub. You call it whatever you like. And I always search for amateur radio, and I look for the latest things that are going on. And this one popped to the top of the list, and it looks like it's sort of very new, and not necessarily information is in completely in GitHub, except for the webpage. But this is a chart, and it's the Completely Hackable Amateur Radio Telescope Project. And it is a project hosted by Adam Beardsley from Arizona State University. And the goal of the project is to assemble a portable, affordable amateur radio that high school classrooms can use with ease. I'm assuming you meant amateur radio telescope. This is a real early, real early website, but this project is kind of like a side project of the team there at Arizona State University based upon the very small radio telescope over on the MIT page, which is more of a significant project. But I thought this was kind of interesting because their plan is to have everything open source and using rather cheap hardware, including the RTSTL dongle that I just bought from Amazon there. So using that along with a Raspberry Pi 3, and I'm assuming some software that will be popped out. So I'm kind of excited to see what's going to happen with this project. All their stuff says their initial startup is in July. So that's right now. So it's too early to tell where this is going to go. But looks like it's an interesting project. They got several students, undergrads involved and graduate students involved, it looks like, according to their page. I can't be sure because it's not complete yet. But they have started. And hey, they caught our eye because we just happened to be looking at the right time. And the second thing I came across was AB4UG log, which is Eugene's project. He's in here every once in a while. I don't see him in the list tonight. He's the I'm a bug user when he pops in here. And he hasn't really done anything, because I think we mentioned this the last time I took a dive, but I noticed that he happened to check in his composer lock file, which was just 3 days ago. So apparently he knew I was going to look this week. And he just wanted another mention. So he must be kind of like cheating the system here. Maybe he's checking that in like every week just to see if it'll pop up on the list. So so maybe he's telling me something. So I think I'm going to have to go ahead and download this and take a look at it, or even talk to him next time I see him in the chat room and say, tell me all about your logger, and we'll take a look at it. And of course, that's looks like a web-based logger based on the Laravel framework, which I believe is a PHP framework with, of course, a bunch of goody web 0.350 stuff added to it.
Bill's just making things up now,
it doesn't matter at this point. Are you still listening, people?
Laravel is a PHP web framework, of course, and there is no web 3.50 or whatever you said, so
yeah, okay, whatever.
I think it's still 2.0.
Yes, okay, we're in like bootstrap we might 4, have though, to, right?
So when is web 2.0 going to start going the way of like Firefox? When is it going to be web like 37.0? You know,
yeah, isn't it like 64 or something?
Or yeah, I don't know. It could be. I have no idea. Every time Firefox starts up, it upgrades.
Yeah, it's like updating all your drivers and stuff. What are? It's almost like having Android installed as a web browser.
Yeah, or something like that.
Ooh, there's some thunder for you. You hear that?
Oh, yeah. Well, we had all the birds. Now we have thunder. Too. Now you have thunder. Shut the birds up.
Yes, yes. So you get all kinds of sound effects here because I have the garage door open. I am in the garage. I'm not on the deck. But, you know, as soon as the gate opens up, everything floods into this microphone that's right behind me.
All right, excellent. So that is basically our topics for tonight. We want to thank everybody who showed up in the chat room, and there's actually quite a bit of discussion going on in the chat room, so we'll probably hang out for a little bit and talk with the folks who are here live with us about that. But we don't want to forget our social media roundup and thank everybody who's come on board while we've been kind of on our short hiatus here, and also mention our paid supporters and Patreons. So we'll let Cheryl run down through this rather extensive list.
Yes, it is. So, all right. So for this time, our Patreons are John Spriggs, Steve Sainer, Donald Gover, Robert Pitts, Paul Griffith, Jonas Rulo, John Zaruba Jr., Samuel Vimes, Steve Metcalf, Chris Beggio, Darren King. Subscriptions is Steve Hepler, Jeff Zimmerman, Michael Jopling, Steve Nichols, Todd Bowers, Thor Wiegman, Stephen Harp, Charlie Brown, Kevin Murray, Wayne Carpenter, Doug Redder, Bill Pioter, Dylan Engel, Alan Wilson, John Clark, Michael Aiello, Robert Halliday, Brian Smith, Johnny Kinsey, Ronald Icke, Robert Yerke, Michael Conley, and Jeremy Hall. Whew, okay, that's that list. Facebook is Stephen Dole, Shane Albrecht, Murad Ahmed, James Felling, Emily Diadine, and Tim Webb.
That'd be Emil. He's in the chat room. You might want to get his name right.
Sorry, Emil. Sorry. Again, no glasses. I'm trying to zip through this. Nobody on Google Plus. Twitter is
Wow, nice thunder.
Let me turn that down.
You're going to turn the thunder down? Boy, you've got talent.
I'm magical here.
You're going to have to do the rest. My computer just went into an update.
An update? Oh, goody. Well, I will run down through the rest then. For Twitter, we have at Dave38317968, at Richard79789432, at Stransky_Lubos, at RJSJR1959. That's probably RJS Jr. 1959, at Techno Psychania, at KC9HKT, at Paul J. McCabe Mesa, at Tanny Lolly, at Whiskey Echo 4 Bravo, it's actually WE4 Bravo, but, and at VA3VNA, Victor Alpha 3, Victor November Alpha, and at PS1S_2018, which is actually, it's an IOTA activation, I think. Let me look at that real quick. What was that? Anybody get Twitter up real quick?
Wow, which one are you doing?
The last one, at PS1S.
Oh, PS1S. I can look that up real quick.
Yeah, I think it's an IOTA activation.
Looking. Where did I have? Oh, I put it on this computer. PS1S.
Underscore.
Yeah, it's a deexposition. It is a deexpedition to a Santanin. Oh. God, I can read it. I'm like Cheryl. It's too far away from my eyes. I can't see Santania Island. This is IOTA SA-077. So
there you go. If you're into IOTA and the expeditions, and you want to contact Santania Island, which I have no friggin' clue where that is, let's look that up real quick.
Santana Island?
Is that what it is? Is it Santana?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
For those that didn't know, we're all blind as a bat.
And nobody apparently knows how to increase their font size
Well, yeah, look, it's Santana Island. Sorry, Santana Island.
Where is Santana Island?
Somewhere in the middle of water.
Is it Santana Madera Island or is it Santana Island?
Well, now you're asking too much information.
PS1S. Santana.
There's a Santana Island in Brazil.
Okay, let's see. Here's the website for it. Or here's an article about it.
It's Isla de Santana. So this is DX World. We'll be active. Let's see. Blah, 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 blah.
It's, yeah, it's a Brazilian island.
Brazilian island. Active dates, QRV, will be July 26th through the 30th. I'm sure they wanted the free shout-out, so here you go. You get there it for free.
Yeah. And I'm looking at a picture of this island. I want to be on this expedition.
Yeah, that's a very cool island.
They'll be running Riddy PSK31 FT8 probably in D expedition mode.
I can assure everyone that this D expedition has nothing to do with amateur radio.
Just chilling on the beach, getting some margaritas.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so let's move on real quick. On YouTube, we had Emil Dianine, Te Agamemnon, Richard Subers, Matt Gregg, and Jeremy Smith, mailing list Russell Ferris and HP Garcia, and merch sales we had Arthur Jones. Woo-hoo. So there, we finally got through the list. Long list it was. All right. Did your computer come back up?
Nope.
Okay.
All right. Well, is it running Linux?
No, it's running Windows.
We can't get Linux to run on my computer.
Well, that's why we're having problems, because it's Windows. You know that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Have you put the LHS version 1 build on there yet?
Oh, and by the way, we've been saying Diadine, and it's Diadene.
Diadene.
Emil Diadene.
Diadene.
Yeah.
Diadene.
So we all screwed it up.
Nay. Okay.
Somebody alert Gary.
Yeah.
Deo. Okay. Deodene.
Deodene.
Deodene. Deodene.
He can remind us next time. Daylight
come and one go home.
Oh, my Lord. Deodene.
I haven't even been
just
drinking.
Emil. I'm sure he doesn't say his last name on the show very much. Right. I'd be like, what?
Yeah.
What did you say? Is that a diode?
You know, here's the deal. We have a person that was born and raised in Southwest Missouri. We have a person that was born in New Hampshire that is now relocated to Southwest Missouri and works in Arkansas. And we have a person that was born and raised in Florida that has now moved to Montana. Yeah, so we're not real good on that whole
thing. Yeah, and I'm suffering from altitude sickness, so, you know, can't count anything I say, right?
All right. Well, he's from Louisiana, or at least he lives in Louisiana, and that sounds like a rather Acadian French name. So he's probably got some good Cajun food up his sleeve.
Yeah.
We should put him in touch with Hutch.
Yeah, maybe so.
I'll leave you one quick story before we cut out of here.
All right.
Just because we mentioned Montana. I had the weirdest request 2 days ago from my son's friends. They wanted to borrow our snowshoes. So this is June 30th in Montana. And they went hiking up to Arrow Lake for some stupid Reddit thing that was going on, of some mysterious thing that might be there or whatever. Anyway, it was apparently a 5-mile treacherous hike where there was at least 3 foot of snow everywhere.
Nice.
He said it was the worst hike he's ever done. And they, of course, camped overnight there. And you go into the r/Montana subreddit, you'll see a picture of Arrow Lake. And if you look real closely, you'll see a orange pair of snowshoes and a silver pair of snowshoes, and those are mine. In the picture, it's a beautiful picture of the lake, and it's just snow covered as all heck up there. So nice. And they're calling for more snow as well. I just heard we're getting more snow up on the mountain. So
There was actually, we were watching the news the other night where I want to say it was in like Halifax or something, I guess school goes in, or went until like July 1st or something. But they were in the middle of a blizzard the other day as the school buses were trying to get kids home from school. And I was like, okay, yeah, we're in a severe drought here and melting. So, yeah, it's been fun. So,
all right. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in, for visiting with us in the chat room and talking with us live. And we will be coming to you for the Weekender here on Thursday. We haven't done a Weekender in a month either. So that'll be fun. So tune in for that. And until then, we will say goodbye for now. So thanks once again for listening to episode number 233 of Linux in the Ham Shack. I'm Russ, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD73.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a community-sponsored podcast. Our website is located at lhspodcast.info. You can support the program by visiting the LHS Patreon page of patreon.com/LHSpodcast or using the contribute link on the website. Get in touch via social media. The show has a presence on Google+, Facebook, Twitter, Discord, and YouTube. Or you can drop an email to info@lhspodcast.info or record a voicemail at 1-909-LHS-SHOW. That's 1-909-547-7469. Visit the IRC channel, LHS Podcast, on the Freenode IRC network. Also visit the online merchandise store at shop.lhspodcast.info for fun and fashionable LHS merchandise. Become an ambassador and represent LHS at a Linux convention or hamfest. Email ambassadors@lhspodcast.info or visit the website for details. The podcast is recorded live every Monday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Time. Connect to the stream at stream.blacksparrowmedia.net/8008/LHS live. Until next time, over and out. Linux in the Ham Shack and the Linux in the Ham Shack logo are released under a Creative Commons Attribute Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License.